what happened was is I would drink, and then when I would get drunk, I'd start smoking, and then when I was drunk enough, I'd start taking a load of cocaine and drugs. Now I'm addicted to helping people, so I've tried to, the things that I'm addicted to, I try to use for good.
You could have quite easily have looked at your past and been like, I had the wrong teachers, I went to the wrong school, like, these people didn't like me, the system's broken, yada yada. But you didn't. You pointed internally and you said, the only thing getting in my way is me.
The idea of storytelling is essential, and the reason it's essential is because it helps people connect with you and create stronger connections.
And what do you think stops more creative business owners, agency owners sharing their story / business story? In today's episode, I am talking with James Martin, aka Made by James. For those of you in the creative space that have never come across James, he is best known for his logo and brand design. He's amassed hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram and other social media channels, I believe, for his down-to-earth, authentic approach when it comes to designing logos and growing a creative business. James is a best-selling author, a public speaker, a creative coach, and an all-round honest educator. I know you're going to enjoy today's podcast because, first of all, James is just an amazing human. But second of all, we really deep dive into James's background, what it means to show up online authentically as yourself, and a host of other really cool topics that I know you're going to enjoy. As always, if you did enjoy this episode, please hit the subscribe button and share it with a friend. Made by James, aka James Martin. How are we doing today, sir?
Yeah, I'm very good. I'm very good. Thank you, Master Matthew. It's funny, everybody calls me Made by James and then follows with James Martin. Isn't that weird? Surely it should be James Martin, aka Made by James. But you know, I'm here for it.
I think maybe people worry about confusing you with a chef.
It happens. Funny story. I went to his opening at Chewton Glen, the kitchen, one of his restaurants down there at Chewton Glen. I went there for his opening and had like a private chef, you know, experience with him and like eight people, and he cooked for us and we had a nice little chat and I was playing with his knives and we were having a good little chin wag. At this point, he obviously knew my name was James Martin. And at the end of it, I had, my mum loves him, you know, being a mother, James Martin, food, Saturday kitchen, do you know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. So I've got a book from him that is signed by him to my mum saying, thanks for calling this twat James Martin.
That is such a cool story.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah. So last time we caught up properly was in LA at Adobe Max when we were both scrambling around on a whiteboard in front of a few people for the future. And you were doing a few things, but one of them has now come to fruition, which is your partnership with Lincoln Design and kind of moving into that agency. Can you just tell me a little bit more about how that came about, and I guess what you're doing there?
Yes, I can. To be fair, when were we at Adobe Max? Was that October? Was it October?
October, yeah.
Even then, it wasn't particularly so on the cards then. It all kind of happened quite quick. So ultimately, something else has happened. There's a lot that's happened over the last 6 months, to be fair. Leaning, obviously, Made by James has kind of grown into what it's grown into with a lot of effort, a lot of it accidental. Do you know what I mean? I never asked to have what Made by James has in terms of audience or whatever, or community. Obviously, moving into that kind of educational space a little bit more, and exactly like you said, like when I was there with Chris, yourself and Stephanie and Ben and all the rest of the future crew at Adobe Max, teaching some whiteboard stuff. Obviously, I've been moving a bit more into the education space over the last few years with courses, and been giving away free stuff for over a decade, do you know what I mean? So I kind of have slowly moved into this position, whereas the plan was always at the beginning of 2024 to lean a little bit more heavily into that, you know, whereas before I was very much client work and the side hustle was creating courses, helping designers and all the rest of it. So what I decided to do, like I said, at the beginning of this year, was to always maybe switch the dials a little bit. So rather than 80% client work, 20% helping designers, I was going to be 20% helping clients, 80% helping designers, to kind of, you know, after 20 years in the game, servicing clients, helping them build their dreams, I kind of thought, you know, it was time I started to really lean into what I really, really want to do. But I had to, there had to be a calculated element of risk to that. Do you know what I mean? I had to build my community. I had to make sure that the things that I was building people enjoyed. There was no point like leaning heavily into education and nobody liking me. Otherwise, that would have been a real shit move from my point of view. So I've been testing the water, like I said, for the last few years. And Lincoln was obviously a big part of that. So I've been buddies with Dan for a few years now, and that relationship's getting closer and closer and closer, and now to the point where I'm a creative partner in Lincoln Design Co. But the idea of that is I've had chats with Dan, and I've said, look, Dan, I am really looking as of 2024 to lean heavily into the education space, you know, create more courses. I don't really know what I'm creating yet, but I'm just kind of going with it. Communities, podcasts, YouTube back, all this kind of stuff, because I feel like I've got some fun things to do within this space. And Dan, obviously at Lincoln, is never wanting to get into the education space. They tried it, as in they were thinking of leaning into it a fair bit with their conferences and stuff, but then decided that, you know, with all the work they've got and the scaling that they want to do within their agency, you know, working with Disney and all of these fantastically colossal brands, Liquid Death, Hot Wheels and all the rest of it, they just don't have the time. So knowing that they wanted to scale the client side and me knowing I wanted to scale the education side, the relationship just works. We had a conversation, very open. I told him my dreams, he told me his dreams, and what happened was we came to a decision where, you know, at Lincoln they have 15 to 20, and it's growing and growing and growing as they start to scale, continue to scale the agency side of it. So what I do, the work that comes in through Made by James, now gets done under the Lincoln Design Co. vessel. So what happens is I'm basically a partner and all work now gets done there. Now, the team that I had at Baby Giant, my agency, are now with me at Made by James, helping me build the education platform. And I've brought on Melinda Livesey as my creative director. So nobody's lost their job. They are now just working for me. And I say working for me, they're a part of the team. Sounds such a shit thing to say, working for me, but they're not working for me. They're helping me build my dream in the education space. So that is ultimately where the Lincoln Design Co. conversation happened. And it happened quick. Like even at Adobe Max, it was an idea of mine, but I hadn't really started any conversations or anything by that time. But over Christmas, I had some investors come on board with Made by James who really were excited about my vision for design education and accessible design education. So they invested some money, and then obviously a part of the puzzle was trying to find a creative agency, a partner that I could still service my clients under, and that just happened to be Lincoln, who happened to be my dream to work with. It's an amazing full circle moment. I'm actually heading out to the States tomorrow to go and spend some time with them at Creative South and Crop Cons and stuff like that.
Yeah, totally. Sounds like it makes perfect sense. Sounds like a great relationship. I'd love to dive into this idea of client work versus teaching / creating your own content. I think there's a lot of, you refer to them as real designers, right? There's a lot of real designers or real creatives that if they could, would just get rid of all client work and do their own stuff. Just talk to that for a second, and it could just be thoughts, it could be how you got there, just whatever comes up for you.
I mean, I grew up like yourself. We're a little bit old now, Matt. Do you know what I mean? So, you know.
Thanks, mate. Speak for yourself.
Yeah. You know, we grow.
What gives it away?
What gives it away is that shiny head of yours. That's just through hard work, mate.
Exactly, mate. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I grew up, I mean, like yourself, I'm presuming, you know, in a world without social media. Do you know what I mean? I grew up in a world where you start at the bottom and then you worked your way up. But now there is this beautiful thing called social media, which gives opportunity. It allows, you know, when I was a designer starting out, like I would be lucky to work with people in London, being a little village guy. Do you know what I mean? From, you know, my population 3,000 where I live, you know, you started here And then you maybe expanded out to the local city, and then maybe you expanded out to the capital, and that was probably it. Do you know what I mean? Even if you got to people in the capital, you'd be like, yeah, I've made it. But whereas now, it's like the internet has made everything local, hasn't it?
Yeah. Global small business, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was always the kind of dream for me. And like, obviously, now the opportunities are endless with reference to what a community, if you build a community, you obviously have more opportunity and you have more options. The problem is, there is a little bit of a wild, wild west side to it. You know, there are a lot of people selling what they don't do themselves. And, you know, I'm never going to sit here and like openly diss people for trying to make a living. You know, everybody, we're all trying to be something to someone. The only problem I see with it is that there are people who don't know what they're doing teaching people that don't know what they're doing. So what happens is, effectively, you'll have a generation of people who don't really know what they're doing. And there's obviously no, like I said, we're all trying to learn. But I think there's this, people have seen this, there's this growth opportunity when it comes to value, when it comes to education, when it comes to sharing knowledge. Like I said, I'm not going to sit here and tell anybody that they're wrong for doing it. I think when I talk about real designers, I talk about, you know, I think I like to kind of refer to real designers as people who make an actual living out of it, or have made an actual living out of it. You know, having one client a year is not making a living out of design, but then also these people might be educating people on how to build an agency and how to be a successful freelancer. And do you know what I mean? It's just like, people aren't practicing what they're preached because there's no like repercussions now. So like, that's my only thing when it comes to the real designer thing. And I don't mean anything like overly aggressive by it. I just think it's really, really important for people to not get clouded by numbers, by followers, by engagement, by reach, or whatever it is, because it can sometimes create a false picture. I know people with hundreds of thousands of followers who have no work. I also have know people who aren't on social media running seven-figure, eight-figure businesses. So I think it's just this number thing. People look for the number and they presume it's trustworthy, when ultimately they might just be extremely good at marketing themselves.
Yeah, 100%. And what was it that made you want to move away from client work and more towards building a community?
I was a teacher before I was a designer. So going back to my early 20s, went through art school. It was college. I was kicked out of school, did drugs for a shitload of years, and then decided I need to kind of get back and sort my life out. Long story, which we can go into if the time comes, but you know, I do talk a lot. Ultimately, and like what I did is I actually went through PGCEs, like teaching education bits and pieces, and actually taught at schools as a kind of student teacher. But I was early 20s and the people that I were teaching were 13 years old, and I didn't know my own arsehole from my own elbow at that time. So the idea of teaching other people, it just wasn't the right time. So I continued, I did a tattoo apprenticeship, and then continued to kind of work within the design world, and then that turned into running my own agency, which turned into like Made by James. You know, that was I like to think, like some of our friends like Chris Doe and other people like that, you know, kind of almost creating content before creating content was cool. Do you know what I mean? It was kind of very much sharing process, very much using Instagram as a marketing platform quite early on, like over a decade ago now. And now it's the normal thing to do. But like, it was just you know, I never asked for the audience. I never really thought about the audience side of it. It was just like, well, if I want to get clients, a great way to get clients is probably to show my process. And rather than just showing a finished logo, why don't I share the sketches and then how my ideas came about, and then how that turned into a vector, then how that got mocked up. So I was kind of storytelling, but through my whole process over carousels or stills or whatever there was at the time, because there wasn't any reels or video on Instagram back then. So yeah, like I said, like the whole marketing Made by James thing was community, tribe, you know, was a beautiful accident, and something that now I feel like I have a need to be better and do more for people. And like I said, this teacher thing was always there. And I think now, 2024, you think 20 years ago is when I started teaching, and now 20 years later is now when I'm leaning in, because I feel like I know who I am. I feel like I have enough industry knowledge to be able to share the value that I have based around building agencies and building visual identities and helping clients around the world. So it's like I said, the whole is like a happy accident, the whole Instagram thing. And it's just, it's not through lack of effort. Do you know what I mean? Like, fucking hell, like showing up every single day, basically, for a decade. That's not easy when you're not getting paid for it. But you are, in a way, marketing.
Yeah, yeah. I'd really love to like dive down into the topic of clients, because you said something just now, which was like, you thought logically that by sharing your process, it would attract clients, right? So your first question is, was that assumption correct?
Yes.
And you've worked with a lot of clients over the years. You talk a lot about this idea of being the order taker versus the partner. I think I can't remember the exact terminology because we talk about it similarly. But how much of that sharing the process and behind the scenes attracted clients that treated you like an order taker, and how much of that attracted clients that treated you more like a partner or a creative problem solver?
I think it's a journey by itself, isn't it? So when I think of, I kind of call it adventure guide. It's not, that's not my term, but you kind of go from like an order taker, you know. Well, my personal journey was like order taker, vending machine, problem solver, then adventure guide. Do you know what I mean? But that's been a journey of like almost, you know, 20 years. And I think we all start off as order takers. I think that's a part of the journey. You know, you start at the bottom of the pile, and you have to figure shit out. And a part of figuring shit out is ultimately doing what your clients tell you to do and then realizing that that's probably not the best way to do it. So I think there's always this journey essence to it. And when I talk about these kind of stages, order taker, very early stage, vending machine was when I kind of started to get a lot of traction on Instagram, and there was a lot of people wanting logos, and I was basically giving this shit away, you know. I started off at $400 a logo, then it was $1,000, then it was 1,500, then it was 2,000. I was just like 100 logos a year, bang, 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 bang. I was making pretty good money. Thought I was living the fucking dream, but I was sitting there like, I don't even know my name anymore. Do you know what I mean? It was just wild.
Just another day in the office for James.
Yeah, just another day, yeah. But then you start to reevaluate, don't you? You're kind of like, there must be a better way. There must be a better way to do better work. Like, I've always been very good at always like self-evaluating. Like, if something's not quite working, like, how can I make this better? Or what can I do to be better? And like, even that's not just within my client process, but also with myself. You know, I've been through, you know, sexually abused at the age of 11, fell into bad groups and drinking problems and addiction, and kicked out of school, kicked out of home all before 17. And like, I've been in this kind of ever evolving process of trying to be slightly better than the day before. And, you know, now sober for almost 3 years and trying to do more and more and more. But it's the same, like within my life, I try and do it within my business. Like, how can I speed up this process? Like, how can I offer more? How can I do more? And this is the same with the client thing, like I said. So after the vending machine, it was then the problem solver. Like, how can I do more? What bigger problems can I solve? Because theoretically, I can have less clients who give me more money, but still earn the same. So I can somehow gain some of my time back, you know, which would be lovely. Like, who needs to be doing 100 logos a year and just like, bang, bang, bang? Like, I didn't even, you know, this is nothing against my clients, but at that time it was just like, in and out, in and out, in and out. Like, no real thought, no real strategy. It was just like, I want a logo. Cool, I'll do it. You'll have it in a couple of weeks. Bang. Do you know what I mean? Whereas as I started to build my agency and build who I wanted to become within the design space, and watching some of my peers and who I looked up to, I was like, I need to do more. I need to be more methodical and more calculated about my decisions to give this work the best chance of being successful, because if my clients are successful, then I'm successful was my theory. And then, like I said, that's just escalated and escalated into, you know, less clients for bigger budgets, but I'm doing a lot more for them. So yeah, that's the kind of journey. But I think we all start at the bottom and get to here.
Yeah, I think we do. But what I find really interesting is when there's somebody who isn't at the bottom. And when you say we all start at the bottom, I'm assuming what you mean is like in terms of skill set and experience, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah. Year one predominantly to year 20.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what I find really interesting, and I don't know if you noticed this, but when people that I work with are actually at the top of their game creatively, they have the skills and they have the experience, but they're still being treated like order takers. Do you ever see that?
Yeah, I think it's, and I don't want to use this word like not in the right way, but there's like a pandemic, an epidemic. Is that right? One of those things.
One of the demics,
yeah. Where creatives are continuously undervaluing themselves. I don't know the real reason as to why that is. I think it's probably a little bit of a mixture of many things, probably confidence processes. I think as creative people, we all started out not ever thinking of monetizing our creativity, but now the creative industry is probably one of the biggest industries on the planet. Marketing, advertising, creative, like design, you know, it's huge. And maybe the mindset, you know, I think as creative people, we're constantly with this inner child where you used to draw for free or draw on the weekends, and you know, you never really had to make a living. And the problem is, what happens is when you do go into the industry, that shifts somewhat. And I know people, like you say, like who they think they're making good money. Like, yeah, I 5,000 for that particular project. And then I'll ask them, how long did it take them? And they'll tell me like 6 weeks or 40-hour weeks. And I'm like, that's not the best return when you break it down per hour, is it? So I don't know how that shift happens or when it happens for different people.
When did you notice it happening?
I noticed it happening, like I said, like through this constant self evolution, and obviously like reading and obviously watching others and listening to others, getting coaching, starting to take more courses, self-educating and asking questions. I've always been very good at, if I don't know something, I'll happily admit it and I'll ask somebody rather than think that I'm stupid for asking stupid questions, because it's only a stupid question if I don't know the stupid answer. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, I find that really fascinating. Like, can we just pause on that for a second? Because like,
of course,
one thing that strikes me about you is that you don't seem to have an ego. Like you don't really take yourself very seriously. And even in, and I know this is fairly new to you, like the whole education part of your business, but even at Adobe Max, you were kind of like saying to the crowd, like, you know, I'm dyslexic and I can't write and draw at the same time and I don't really know what I'm talking about, and like kind of this stuff, right? And I just wonder where that comes from, like, because in the design space specifically, I think that's quite rare. And I think I know a lot of clients I work with who have very high profile projects, like some of the projects that you mentioned you're working on at Lincoln.
Yeah.
They don't like to admit that they don't know something or even have a problem with something. Like, they wouldn't necessarily say that to someone because it's like, well, surely I don't have a problem because I've been doing this for 20 years. I'm working with these brands. This isn't working, but it must be the market or the economy or my clients. Or like, they're very reluctant to, I think, look internally at themselves. And I just wonder, like, what is it that allows you to do that so consistently?
I think there's two sides to it. Like, the one side of it is obviously, I mean, my schooling, I was always very sporty, but I was never particularly bright. Do you know what I mean? So I was always told I wasn't particularly bright. So that obviously makes it easy for me to admit that I'm not overly bright, because I do know the things that I am good at now, which is being myself. And the more I'm myself, the better my life gets. So the more I lean into that, the better and better and better. But when you talk about the ability to ask questions and stuff, like, again, that comes from trying and openly like knowing that I'm never going to be the finished article and I'm never going to be perfect. But what I am doing is I'm trying every day to be a little bit better. And the good thing is about when I ask a question and I learn something, it makes me better. So the more, theoretically, the more questions I ask, the better I get. So rather than, I do think it stems from upbringing and school and parents or whatever, you know, that kind of inability to, you know, at school, it's like you're either clever or you're thick. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing in between, is there? You're kind of at the top or at the bottom. Like, and I was always very much at the bottom. Now, I was very sporty and I was the captain of all my sports teams and I was excelled there. But in the classroom, I was extremely average, like at the very, very bottom 5% of all of, in all of my bits and pieces. And I do believe dyslexia, now I know more about that, was probably a, you know, I just, it took me ages to even contemplate things and I'd get distracted easily and I couldn't read very quickly. And when you're in exams and you had an hour to do it, like everybody was finishing and I was only like halfway through the papers and I was like panic, stress, do you know what I mean? And it just never used to work. I always used to get told off for not finishing my exams. But, you know, now that would never happen nowadays. You know, we're talking like early 90s when I think dyslexia was kind of being talked about and it was being talked about a little bit, but it wasn't, you didn't get the help that you kind of do now. But like I said, for me, like understanding the fact that I know I'm never going to be perfect and understanding that that's okay actually makes it really easy for me to, like, I know I'm not the best creator. I know I'm not the best at logo design. I know I'm not the best agency owner. I know I'm not the best leader, but I know I'm the very, very best me. Because I, and I don't mean that in some sort of wanky kind of Instagram moment part, do you know what I mean? I truly believe that, you know, I've done a huge amount of work on myself and dealt with a whole load of things like we all have, but I'm so comfortable with who I am that it allows me to understand my flaws and understand my strengths. And what I do is I work on these and I work on these and I'm constantly trying to push myself forward. And like, you know, like I always say, try and be a little less shit every single day. That's kind of the big plan. And asking questions is a big part of that.
Yeah, let's talk about this more because I actually think what you just said there is fundamental to growing a successful business and a successful personal brand. So tell me, what is your process for introspection, for doing the work? Like, what does that actually mean?
I know the things that I am not particularly good at. I know if I can control my mindset and I can control my space, I can become anything I want to become. I know I am the only person that's going to get in the way of becoming whatever I want to become. But this is the biggest obstacle, not me, for everybody, but me is, I'm the biggest obstacle for me, like you are the biggest obstacle for you, and like whoever is listening is the biggest obstacle for themselves. So I spend a lot of time working on the self part of this, like understanding the way I think, understanding the way others think, the understanding why I get angry at stuff, understanding why I'm impatient, understanding why I've got an addictive personality, understanding all the things that are good and bad about me, because then I can use them in good ways. Now, you know, addiction is bad when it comes to drugs, when it comes to alcohol. But now I'm addicted to helping people. So I've tried to, the things that I'm addicted to, I try to use for good. You know, I'm now addicted to learning more and reading more. I'm more addicted to fruit and vegetables than I used to be, like cocaine and cigarettes. Do you know what I mean? So like this whole kind of self-evaluation, and the biggest thing I did, in all honesty, was be very, very open about my past. I used to hide from my past a lot. I used to, not just the kind of sexual abuse side of it, but more the getting kicked out of school. I thought that made me a bad person. I thought being kicked out of home made me a bad person. I thought all the things that I did, which at the time did make me a bad person, like stealing and arson and all this shit, you know, made me a bad person. But I understand that the reason I did those things was A, because I was a little twat, and yes, I was probably in the wrong crowd, and yes, I do have to take some ownership of the bad things that I did, but there was a reason why it all started. There's always a reason why everything happens, and all I've tried to do is try and become better and better and better. And having open conversations about that person that I was allows me to become more of the person that I want to become. And like, I don't believe I'm ever going to be a fully finished piece of chunk of meat or spirit or whatever we want to call ourselves. But I am going to try, because I believed for a long time I didn't try hard enough.
What do you think the difference is between people that blame external circumstances? Like, you could have quite easily have looked at your past and been like, I had the wrong teachers, I went to the wrong school, like, these people didn't like me, the system's broken, yada yada. But you didn't. You pointed internally and you said, the words that you just said to me were the only thing getting in my way is me. I'm wondering, like, where did that belief come from?
I mean, reading. Do you know what I mean? Brené Brown, she made me believe in myself a lot. Do you know what I mean? So I think, like, finding the right books and finding the right heroes and finding the right, creating the good environment. You know, I used to, you know, there was a point where I was either going to be, you know, I had a choice. I was either going to be dead, or if, like, let's not catastrophize so much, in jail, or I had to change. Like, nothing changes if nothing changes. So I had to change something. And rather than, like I said, it's been a slow process, but changing alcohol for positive things like reading and exercise. And, you know, rather than watching TV, I read books. Do you know what I mean? And creating a more positive environment. And also understanding that it's okay, not necessarily to outgrow people, but to outgrow the person that you were. It's okay to want to be more. It's okay to, like, want more. It's okay to not settle. And the more, you know, although it becomes an addictive thing itself, you climb one mountain and then you look at the next one. Do you know what I mean? And then you're at the top of that one and you're looking at the next one. And I am learning to stop somewhat, but I've got such a clear vision of the world that I want to leave behind, and how I want to, in my own way, make the design industry a little bit kinder and a little bit better from my perspective. And I know I can own that if I just, you know, I've got that on my ring, for example, my little signet, MBJ signet ring here. You know, I've got effort is free inscribed into it, because, like, you know, for me, I have a choice when I wake up every single day whether I put effort into myself or not. You know, I work for myself. I don't have to work every day. I don't have to create reels. I don't have to write newsletters. You know, I could still earn as much money now without doing half the things I do. But I just want to continuously put effort into becoming better.
Was there ever a time when you knew that there was a version of you you had to leave behind, but it felt really scary and really uncomfortable?
Yes, obviously the drinking, the alcohol was probably the latest human I left behind a little bit. And obviously more recently, the client, the person who looks after clients more than, you know, saying yes to yourself more than saying yes to what you think you should be doing. But yeah, I mean, the problem is when you let go of something, it's not just that thing that you tend to let go of. There's a lot of things that come with that thing. And usually those are people, you know, friends that you've had for years, suddenly, because of, like, especially I can only talk about my own personal kind of view with this and my own experiences with this. But, like, obviously what happened was, is I would drink. And then when I'd get drunk, I'd start smoking. And then when I was drunk enough, I'd start taking a load of cocaine and drugs. And then what I'd do is I'd stay up late. And then what I would do is I'd wake up late the next day. And then the next day, I'd also eat a load of shit. I'd also be really unproductive. Do you know what I mean? So this one thing was the catalyst for all these other bad things that happened to me. So I realized, like, 2.5 years ago that if I knocked this on the head, all the other things that were that I did after that, the drugs, the bad food, the bad sleep, all the rest of it would theoretically disappear. But because I let go of this, it's not that I don't love them anymore, but I just don't spend a fraction as much time with my friends who possibly still do a little bit of that. And I realized that I had to basically, I just pulled myself out of that friendship group I'd been with for over a decade, almost 20 years. And that's what I said, like, when, like, it's not as easy as, like, I'm going to quit alcohol. It's like, well, I'm going to quit alcohol, and then I'm going to have to figure my diet out, and then I'm going to have to figure my sleep out. I'm also going to have to find new people to spend time with. Do you know what I mean? There's all these things that come with one decision. So when you read things and you understand that, like, certain people get you to certain points in your life, and I think you, like, as you evolve, you have to somewhat change your environment. I've had to change the people I've been around. I've had to change the way I do things, like I said, my diet, the way I sleep, the way I socialize, to become the person I want to become. And I believe you do evolve in, like, whether it's every 4 years or every 7 years, I don't know. People say so many different things. And I think this is why in work, people have those itches. The thing that they found really exciting 3-4 years later, when you're doing it, becomes less exciting. And then you're like, well, what's next? And I think the biggest problem is so many people are scared of what's next. They get in their comfort zone, and the idea of doing anything to change that comfortable space is scary and risky and intimidating, and you catastrophize and it's going to go wrong. Whereas I've just learnt through taking these calculated risks. So, like, what's the worst thing that can happen by building a course, for example? Well, it won't sell. Oh, okay. Well, at least I know I don't have to create another one. At least I've tried that and I failed. And also, like, what's the worst thing that could happen by not drinking? Well, the worst thing has happened, I was going to be healthier. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of things that, you know, friendship groups and all the rest of it. But what was a struggle 2.5 years ago when I made that decision is very normal today. And I think it's this ability to, like, when you start taking these, like, calculated risks or semi-risks or whatever you want to call them, and they work out, you learn that comfort zones are dangerous.
It's like reinforcing that positive behavior, yeah.
Yeah, and like when people say to me, like, oh, you've changed, I go, thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, right? Because from a coaching perspective, I find this fascinating. From a psychological point, I find it fascinating. And there's so much correlation here, I think, between personal stuff that you've been talking about and business. So I meet a lot of people who run a relatively successful business, but like you said, they've got to that point where they know there's more. Maybe they're just not really charging what they want to be charging, or maybe they're not earning as much as they want to be earning, or maybe it's as simple as they just don't have the level of projects they want consistently. And so one of the kind of teachings that we try and lead with is this concept that if you want something new, you have to think in a different way. And more importantly, you have to behave in a different way. And essentially what we're saying is you have to become a different kind of person. I always remember, like, my coach once, he said to me, the only thing standing in the way between you and what you want is the story that you tell yourself about why you don't have it. Right. And so it's kind of alludes to, like, what you said earlier about this idea that we're all kind of standing in our own way. What for you is the hardest thing about letting go of some of that stuff, the version of yourself, the friends, the insert the blank? What's hardest about that?
What's the hardest thing? Now, the reason I'm thinking is because I know the positive side of letting go and what it's done. So for me, there's only positive sides of it. But I think the hardest thing for me was maybe the perceptions of others about me and having to be okay with people thinking, oh, James is no fun anymore, or James is boring because he doesn't come out anymore. Or do you remember when, yeah, like I said, James was fun? You know, I think it was this perception of, like, I suppose there's the risk side of it, of, like, am I making a mistake? But there's, like, I think once you've made that decision and you've committed to it, it's the constant mind battle of, what do other people think about me? Although when you're moving into a new version of yourself, like, you do have to let go of those people, like we said. But, like, it's that kind of disconnect. Do you know what I mean? Because, I mean, I've always been very, very, I say very okay with, like, myself and being okay in my own space. You know, there was a quote once that's always resonated with me, which is, like, if you're lonely when you're alone, you're in bad company. Do you know what I mean? So I've always tried to consistently work on bits and pieces like that. But I think it's so easy to kind of place worth on what others think about you rather than what you think about you. And I think that was probably the most difficult thing, was being overly reliant on, well, I'm always the fun guy who's up late and is the last to go to bed. That's what I do. That's what James does. Do you know what I mean? Whereas even if I didn't like it, I quite enjoyed being that person for somebody else. You know, that guy, you know, or James is always the funny drunk. Do you know what I mean? Or James is always taking his tooth out and putting it in people's drinks. Do you know what I mean? Like, that kind of guy.
There's a select group of people that find that funny.
Yeah. The amount of, I've done some fucking weird shit in my life, mate, I'll tell you. But letting go of the person that other people see or saw. Because it's, what's also important to remember that, like, just because I want to change and I want to do different things or want to be more, that doesn't mean that other people have to. Do you know what I mean? And I think that was always a challenge, was for me, was also remembering it's okay if people are happy with what they've got and what they're doing and their life and all the rest of it. Like, even if they do complain about it and they do whinge about it, it's okay if that's, like, I can't control what they do, but I can control what I do. So, yeah, I think that was probably the most difficult thing, was just being okay with other people thinking that I might be a little bit boring and different and, you know, not the same anymore.
Yeah. This really ties into this concept of, like, being yourself and being authentic. I want to explore that for a second. You mentioned something which is actually really interesting. So, like, just to give you some context around this, I'm writing my next book, and I'm going to call it the name of the podcast, which is Creative Courage. And the way I'm going to lay it out is, like, each chapter is going to be the courage to, and then it's going to be a subject like this. So, like, be yourself, the courage to let go, the courage to say no, the courage to, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to talk for a second. I might just steal all your ideas, but please, I'll probably quote you in the book at some point. Yeah. What was the hardest thing for you about just being yourself and being all of you and showing up online how you are today, with all your quirks, with all your baggage, with all the stuff that you've told me that you've done and that you've got?
I think you kind of, like, self-answered. You're like a self-cleaning oven, but I think you kind of answered it for me somewhat. Like, you know, I had to be okay with the baggage. The problem is, especially when we talk about, let's kind of talk about it in a bigger picture here. So, men showing emotion, like my parents and my dad and his dad's dad and his dad's dad, you know, that was a, you know, men don't cry, men don't talk about emotions, men don't talk about mental health, men don't talk about bliss, they don't talk, they just get on with it. Do you know what I mean? Like, chin up, head
stiff
down.
Upper lip.
Exactly, yeah. Especially here in the UK. But I think it was very common globally. Social media, the birth of that, what are we talking, like, 20 years ago, early birth of that, maybe 15 years ago when it started to catalyze, and obviously now today, the beast of what it is. So the idea that you can go on, although it's changing somewhat over the last 3 years, I definitely have seen a shift. But let's kind of revert to maybe, like, Instagram circa 2015, 2016. It was all, look how great my life is. People posing in front of cars they didn't own. You know, like, look how great my, you know.
That's why I'm in Dubai. Just so,
yeah,
I can be,
exactly,
do that.
I live in Dubai. You are actually now the king of Dubai. Sheikh, I don't know what the word is. Yeah. But yeah, this whole idea of this kind of overly positive, like, pretense of look how great everything is. Whereas I've always kind of known that life isn't like that. You know, it's good and it's bad. And then hopefully the good outweighs the bad. But, you know, like, when I was going on Instagram, I was seeing people show finished logos, complete, perfect logos. And I was like, that's great. But for me, it's the story that happens before that that makes it interesting. It's the wrong ideas. It's the shitty sketches. It's this, it's that. So that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to open up a little bit more of the process to kind of show people that it's sort of sometimes a bit messy and it sometimes doesn't work, but you do eventually get to a point where it's perfect, which is a logo possibly. And I think just through being more active and understanding, like, as my kind of community was growing, that I had a responsibility to be more myself on a platform that was continuously telling you to be something else, you know, be richer quicker, grow your audience quicker, like do better work, charge more money. Do you know what I mean? Like, why aren't you making six figures in a weekend, you wanker? Like, come on, you're shit. This pretense of wanting to be this or be it quicker.
So let's talk about authenticity. Like, what I'm basically hearing from you is that you made peace with the parts of yourself or your story that you were maybe a bit ashamed of or that you hadn't made peace with. Is that fairly accurate?
That is 100% accurate. And I think the word you mentioned there, which is key, is story. Every story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. The problem, not the problem, but a lot of people are only comfortable with sharing the end, where they are now, the success, the happiness, or the potential happiness, or whatever it is, you know, because the beginning and the middle maybe feel too boring or too difficult, or they hurt too much, or they create too much anxiety, or they make you remember a person that you didn't particularly like, whatever it is. Do you know what I mean? So, and I think as a brand builder, I know you are one as well, or a brand helper, you know, or have been one, you know, that the idea of storytelling is essential. And the reason it's essential is because it helps people connect with you. For me, sharing my entire story has allowed me to create connections with people quicker and create stronger connections. And it was never a marketing ploy. It was never a tactic to manipulate people. It was something that I did and saw great power in. You know, I've been at, you know, even when we're at Adobe Max with the future, there was a fully grown man who came up to me and told me that I'd helped him, and he started crying because he was talking about his own sexual abuse. And that is the reason why I share it. Like I know, and I know you know this as well, we are way more than the work that we create. But I think the problem is with online and marketing and this need to grow a business and make more money, like it's very easy to forget that we are more than the work that we create, because all we talk about online a lot of the time is the work that we create. And then when we're away, we possibly get on with our life. And then when we're back in online, we talk about work because that's what we're told that we should do, which is true. Do you know what I mean? To a point. So yeah, I think this understanding of like knowing that my story is much bigger than what people see right now. There's been a whole journey, a whole 40 years to get to this point. And just like a logo and just like a, you know, a visual identity project, it starts here and it finishes here. I'm not just going to show people this bit. I'm going to show them the whole journey, because that makes what it makes this make more sense, ultimately, is what I would suggest. So that beginning, middle, and end is the key, I would say.
How important do you think that story piece is in the context of growing a successful creative agency or creative business?
When it comes to, for example, so I, again, only from my own personal perspective, like growing Baby Giant, made by James Martin, personal brand. Baby Giant Creative Agency, up until recently. Obviously now I'm at Lincoln. So by me, like made by James and his story, him sharing his story, this personal brand online helped Baby Giant thrive. Without Made by James telling his story, there wouldn't have been as much work. There wouldn't have been as much trust built as quick. Baby Giant by itself, you know, would have taken a lot longer, because Baby Giant was around before Made by James. Let's all remember this. Like Baby Giant birthed 13, 14 years ago. Made by James only started to really catalyze maybe 7 or 8 years ago, possibly 10 years ago. I think 12 years ago is when I did my first post. Do you know what I mean? So, but there was nobody watching then. But the growth of Baby Giant was the symbiotic relationship between the two was so important. So growing and telling the story of my personal life helped Baby Giant grow the agency. So I would say story is really, really important. And I think especially, I mean, you know, whether I know they're slightly different, because, you know, whether it's within the agency, there might be more than one. And, you know, vice versa. You know, within the personal brand, there's usually generally one. But I think the ability to connect with people only can happen through story, personally.
And what do you think stops more creative business owners, agency owners sharing their story / business story?
They're probably worried that it might affect their business. I speak to a lot of people who are scared of sharing their story because they think it might ruin their opportunities for people that they don't even want to work with, which is bonkers to me. Like, what I'm trying to pretend to be something else I'm not to get work I don't really like is a common conversation I have with people. And that work doesn't even particularly pay them that well.
Why do people do that?
I think it's possibly this preconception of what success is, or preconception of what winning is, or preconception of, well, this person likes working with these people, therefore I should. Or a lot of the time, people think it's about, or I think people think it's about where the money is. You know, where the, you know, if I work with this particular type of client, they're going to have the budget to work with me. Like, people always talk about corporate. And it's like, I've worked with some like huge companies, but they don't have the budget to do certain things. They've got to be very, they've got lots of money, you know, they've got lots of assets, and they turn over a lot of money, but that doesn't give them the ability just to drop billions or millions or hundreds of thousands on a project. They're also working within a budget, a lot of the times a lot tighter than what else. So some of my biggest projects have been with individuals, entrepreneurs, small family businesses, because they know that they need to invest to level up and to compete. So I think a lot of the times it's this misconception that if I have this particular type of client and do this particular type of work, that's where the money is. But ultimately, I believe the money isn't always there. Some of the times it is, do you know what I mean? But often, from my own experience, it's not. And this preconception of, like I said, like working with these big clients is going to be where I make all my money. It's not the truth, from what I've experienced anyway.
Yeah, I think that's such an important message, because I see so many people selling out, for want of a better word, or compromising their own values because they believe this client is going to be the next thing that makes their business, or because they believe that, you know, if they could only work with this client, then it would take their business to the whole next level. And like you said, very rarely is that actually the case. So I think that's a really important message. And I think the thing that I've taken from this conversation is the power of being yourself. And I think you are a shining example of that. So I'd encourage anybody who's, you know, listening to this to go and check you out on social media, especially Instagram. You put so much stuff out there where you literally are just you. You own your shit. Like you said, the good, the bad, the ugly, like, you just own it. You're really good at being you. And you are one of the most authentic people that I've ever met. And it's been an absolute pleasure having a conversation with you, dude.
Oh, thanks, pal. Yeah, means a lot. I'm excited for round two.
If people want to find out more about you, where is the best place to look? How can they get inside your brain and get more of the goodness that we've talked about today?
Well, the beautiful thing is, now Google's very kind to me. So if you do type in "Made by James" into Google, this guy comes up, which is great. Not the chef anymore. Don't type in James Martin, because that's a useless thing. You just get a guy holding a knife.
Forget that.
There's about 20 other more important James Martins, maybe more.
What's the platform that you hang out the most on if people want to connect with you?
LinkedIn and Instagram are probably my two top ones. That's where I'm most prevalent. I'm getting back into YouTube, and obviously my website, themadebyjames.com, and on my free newsletter there is a pretty good place every week where I'm dropping the most value. So Made by James, just come find me.
Awesome. We will put a link to all of that in the show notes. We'll link to your website, we'll link to your Instagram, we'll link to your LinkedIn. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast, and I also look forward to round two.
Thanks, dude. Catch you soon.
Before you leave, if you found this episode valuable, please hit the subscribe button. Also, if you are a creative business owner doing more than 10K a month and you want to grow and scale without working longer hours or hiring a massive team, then I have something you may be interested in. We have just developed a tool that will give you a custom growth strategy based on exactly where you are in your business right now, so you can stop consuming lots of random content and trying to figure things out on your own and actually get something personalized to you. You will also receive a free copy of my book and it will point out relevant chapters. If you'd like to take the scorecard, it's totally free. You just have to click the link in the show notes or connect with me on LinkedIn and you will see a link in my bio. Thanks for listening. This is the Creative Courage Podcast.